The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. Do not adjust your date and time. We are here on a special Saturday edition of the Hard Rock Empire for Saturday, April the 26th, 2025. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. We're going to have a special two-episode weekend of the Hard Rock Empire. This is episode number 62 of the Hard Rock Empire, episode number 161 of the Nerdcast Empire. Great to have you along with us tonight. We are going to be talking about the music of April the 4th. We'll be back in about 24 hours' time to talk about the music of April the 11th. So a lot of music for you this weekend. Really excited to bring that to you here on the Hard Rock Empire. Joining me in studio on this Saturday night is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. It's good to be back. Good to be back talking music. A lot of good music between this week and next week's selection that we go through. So pretty excited about that. A lot of news to talk about. It's been a while, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of stuff going on, and certainly there'll be more stuff going on as we go forward that will kind of alter our schedule over the next few weeks. But we'll try our best to kind of keep you up to date on when and where we'll be scheduled or we'll be streaming. And we hope you'll join us either live or on the VOD or on YouTube or on Twitch. Decided to kind of plug our YouTube stream today just because, honestly, we're getting a lot of views on YouTube. So we definitely want to take advantage of that. So hello to everyone who joins us on YouTube, either live or on the VOD, or the same on Twitch as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate it. No news podcast this weekend, just our two music podcasts, and our news podcast will be back next Saturday. So make sure you look forward to that. Let's get to some of the news Mike has mentioned. And really the reason why we kind of got off on our schedule last week was because of some wrestling, and it was indeed WrestleMania weekend. And as you see, the rundown says Rock at WrestleMania. No, it was not Dwayne Johnson at WrestleMania. he decided he was not going to show up.
But it was not Don Morocco.
It was not actually Don Morocco either. It was not Tim Raines. A little more obscure one. But it was indeed just some good old-fashioned rock and roll at WrestleMania. We wanted to just touch on that briefly to kind of get things started. Both nights featured some rock acts performing, obviously. I think the one that maybe, honestly, I'm not surprised to see them. We kind of knew was going to happen was Living Color showing up to play CM Punk to the ring on the main event of night one of WrestleMania. And then Kerry King showing up to play Damian Priest to the ring for night two during his match against Drew McIntyre. The special acts went 0-for-2. Both of those guys were defeated.
It's usually how that works for some reason.
Usually how it works, but both certainly were very memorable performances. Curious to get your thoughts. Again, not surprised by Living Color. We just saw them live last year, and they were amazing. And that's got to be one of the better live performances of an opening song that WWE's ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Living Color, we had first heard that they were going to be playing on Fremont Street that weekend. And, you know, when you hear that that's happening, it, you know, 1+1=2. Maybe they'll show up at WrestleMania. And then lo and behold, that is what happens. Man, as far as a band that has been around as long as they have, they rock. There's no doubt about that. And and kind of between them and Kerry King both, it's just another example of why getting real musicians, licensed music is so important with the presentation of your of a professional wrestler. This is so much more impactful and feels like such a larger deal than just having your in-house music production people throw together generic rock track number two for your wrestler's entrances. The Kerry King thing is really awesome. Right up there to me as far as cool guitarist led entrances is like Marty Friedman playing Hiroshi Tanahashi down to the ring at Wrestle Kingdom. Just another really cool example for that. And it just goes to show you that heavy metal and pro wrestling mix so well together. I wish they would lean further into that, especially with the actual show themes that maybe don't, unless you get the weekend, maybe they don't quite hit the mark for me.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it's good to see when they do use rock music. I think that still resonates with a lot of fans. Certainly understand, you know, you had some country acts, you had some hip hop acts as well. And I kind of get where the appeal is for there, even if it doesn't really appeal to me. But, you know, I think it goes back to the bigger issue that WWE has right now is that their in-house music people are just not very good. And for every one hit that they come up with, they have 10 misses. It was painfully evident during the Royal Rumble match, because there were just so many times that music would play and be like, okay, who's that? Oh, okay, it's them. Or is this a new song? Didn't they just have a new song last week? It just feels like there's just constant just churning of music, and it's all just kind of mediocre. So when you have, songs like Cult of Personality, when you have, the song like the Slayer infused song with Damian Priest, it makes those stand out. And I think, again, no better example than 24 hours ago, Aleister Black made his return to the company.
Yeah.
And his theme song, which was a creation of the previous music group that is no longer, with the company. Everybody was excited. His presentation immediately is serious. It was something that, you were worried that they were going to take that away from him, because they did for Rusev, and I don't understand that one either, but
no, nor do I.
It's, if you've got a great theme, if you've got one that stands out, it helps your whole presentation, because Cody Rhodes coming back with some generic theme 2 or 3 years ago, maybe he still ends up because he's Cody and he's got this charisma that somehow overcomes everything. But that presentation with his theme song elevated everything that he did, really, from the time he stepped back into WWE.
I think the theme song is a necessary component of the overall character. I think that American Nightmare character doesn't quite have the same level of impact with just a random rock riff.
Yeah.
It's the song. It's the message in the song. Everything about it tells you more about this character. And when you know that there is a legitimate rock band behind it, or like with CM Punk, a legendary metal act, it tells me this guy must be a big deal. Like, you're further explaining to me that this guy is a star. And to your point about the Royal Rumble, watching it almost feels like you're watching it from like 20 years in the future, and all those people had normal themes, but WWE didn't want to pay the royalties for it, so they just switched it out with kind of like if they were to air like an old ECW event, they wouldn't play any of the licensed music. It would instead be just some generic riff for everybody. That's what it feels like, only it's happening right in front of us in modern times.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And it's one area that they still need to step their game up. And when you have an opportunity to bring in people like they did, it makes it really all that more glaring that you could be doing that with a lot of other guys that are struggling to get over, or really could just use that presentation to push them to the next
level. How do you determine who deserves that? I mean, why does Rhea Ripley get the theme she gets and not a random rock track? Like, not singling her out specifically, but it's that idea that she's a big star, but that song also helps. That gets her over even to a greater degree. Why aren't we doing that for everybody?
Well, and honestly, if I was going to go to WWE, if I'm Mariah May, for example, somebody whose name comes up a lot, that she could be rumored to come to WWE when her contract expires, I'd negotiate that into my deal.
Yeah.
Like, you will let me pick some licensed music, or you will allow me to have input over my music creation. Otherwise, I'm not signing with you, because I know that if I don't come in with the right presentation right out of the gate, especially in WWE where there's so many talented women, you could be dead on arrival.
And the answer isn't put a sound bite at the beginning of the generic song so you know it's that person.
So
like,
dumb.
Like, I understand the mindset of, well, that makes it obvious, but the music should make it obvious.
Just the whole, the breaking glass at the beginning of Stone Cold's theme has ruined music today, because now they just think, well, if we have this sound, they did it with Ricochet when he was there with a stupid gunshot.
Well, it's like The Rock. It's the, you smell the Rock's cooking at the beginning of what then is really kind of a mediocre track.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's iconic because it has that sound bite at the beginning.
Right. But it's at the same time that doesn't excuse laziness on music. Yeah. So it was great stuff. We really enjoyed it. Most of WrestleMania was really good if you're a wrestling fan. Some of it at the end was not, but
the vast majority was a positive experience.
It was, for sure. We'll see where it kind of goes from here. But yeah, if you get a chance, obviously, I think Slayer is going to be doing some dates. It sounds like, again, and obviously Living Color still very much touring. You should definitely go see them in person if you get the chance. Well, let's move on to a couple other news stories. And this is one that I think Mike and I are kind of on the same page as far as the idea, but maybe the execution didn't go so well right out of the gate. A story on Metal Injection's website about a Ghost concert that And, you know, they are going to be, they are touring, and part of the touring issue is that they are not allowing people to have phones and at the concert. They're having to lock them up prior to going into the venues. And evidently some of these venues maybe just aren't equipped to be able to handle that. And because of that, there was an issue with a show in Birmingham in the United Kingdom where there was a very lengthy line to get in that lasted more than an hour. And the fear is these types of things are going to deter bands from going this route. Because honestly, there's a part of me that really kind of respects the idea of no phones at concerts. There's nothing more annoying. And I challenge you, and obviously it's very easy to do. Yeah, everybody's watching the concert through their phone, but I challenge you, pick some random moment from WrestleMania and go on YouTube and type it in, and you will see not just obviously a handheld version of the clip from somebody who recorded it on their phone, but I saw one of, I can't remember what it was, but it was from kind of the upper bowl, and you can see like all the people in the front section have their phone out up. It's like they're, like, everybody around you is recording it. Do you think you're going to get the one angle that's going to be unique to the situation? I just don't understand.
You paid a lot of money to watch this through a screen.
Yeah, and and that's crazy, honestly. So, you know, I do respect what they're doing. It is a little concerning that some of these venues aren't ready for this, and hopefully it's something that as it maybe this trend becomes more pervasive, that these venues will be more on top of it, because honestly I think it's a good thing that they're doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because my initial thought was I wonder how this is going to work on a large scale, but I seem to recall them talking about bigger artists who have employed the same strategy, and it seemed to be totally fine. So I guess it really must just be certain venues having some limitations, but yeah, I hope they get it figured out. And you know, the article kind of talks about, like, Tobias Forge talking about it, basically saying, you know, trying to frame it as, this isn't just me being like an old person saying, hey, you know, I don't want you to do this, or I don't want you to have any kind of video footage of me. It's not even so much that. It's more about enjoying an experience where you're not connected. And I think that's the big thing, and that, yeah, I get you paid money for the ticket, you should be able to do what you want, whatever. But I don't think people really understand. I think a couple hours unplugged from your phone would actually do you a world of good beyond just watching the concert. Yeah. I think we've allowed ourselves to just be constantly connected, and I don't know if that's always the healthiest way to live. I don't think you always need to be plugged in. I think take 3 hours and just enjoy live music with a bunch of people around you. Enjoy the experience of just living in the real world, and don't worry about what's going on X or Facebook or Instagram. Just let that all, that's going to be waiting for you on the other side. Just enjoy the moment. I think it would be therapeutic for a lot of people if you gave yourself regular time, whether it's daily, weekly, or even just at concerts, to just step away from it.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you're recording a video that's not going to be great to look back on. Like, if you want to take some pictures, like, that's completely fine. Yeah. Like, take some pictures of the stage, take some selfies to show you were there. Like, I got no problem with that, but the phones are not made. They're not high quality camera devices to record great audio. And the audio is really the bigger issue more than anything else. Yeah. It's just not going to be great coming through your phone. So yeah, hopefully, like I said, hopefully it's not an issue where you start seeing this become more common, where there's lots of lines to get into these concerts. I will say, like, the only thing I will say about the issue that they kind of gave me just a little bit of concern is I'm hoping that if we're doing this, that they will also give you the option to have either paper tickets or printed tickets, because to be honest, if I was going to a concert where they were going to lock my phone up, I would want to be able to leave my phone in my car.
Yeah, and to me, that's the ideal answer.
Just not bring it in at all.
That way I don't worry about having it in some sort of like secured bag and any kind of mishaps that could possibly occur from that. Just leave it in my glove compartment, move on.
But the challenge is if your ticket is digital and you've got to take your phone into the facility to get in, then you have no choice but to take the phone in with you. So I would, you know, it'd be nice if it was a case where, you know, you could just have some sort of paper ticket or something that would allow you to leave your phone behind. I mean,
I'm a very old school person, so the thought of having an old ticket stub is really cool still, as meaningless and unimportant as it is, it's just, it's that identifiable thing that, hey, that meant you were at that concert. You have that old tearaway stub left. I get that there's probably some money saving involved here, but I don't know. There's just a certain novelty about it that I enjoy.
The old Ticketmaster tickets that you used to get before everybody really hated Ticketmaster. And then Ticketron, which was another ticket company back in the day that basically did the same thing. So we'll see. Hopefully it ends up working out better. We'll kind of keep an eye on that and see if there's any more stories that come forward as the concert tour continues. One last note, we always like to talk about festivals on here. Of course, we'll be talking in a couple weeks about rock, what was Rock on the Range, now Sonic Temple, which will be coming up in Columbus in a couple of weeks, which will cause another schedule change on our podcast. But this is the Monsters of Rock Cruise has announced bands for the upcoming event. It'll be coming up. Actually, this is for next year's event, April 12th through the 17th, 2026, starts in Miami. We're also going to be Puerto Plata and Great Stirrup K. This is a pretty outstanding lineup. I'm not a big fan of cruises, and I don't know that I would go on one. But if I were to want to go on one cruise, this is a pretty good option. There's a several bands and several artists that we have talked about on this podcast. We have spotlighted their albums on top of big name acts as well. But I think if you're the type that doesn't mind doing the cruise thing, you should probably get your tickets for this one.
Yeah, I'm amazed by the lineup of this cruise. 5 day, 5 night, full ship music charter. I guess this company has been doing it for a while. They're kind of the preeminent On the Blue Cruises Incorporated. They're the big guys. They've been doing the Monsters of Rock cruise since 2012. But yeah, it makes me kind of upset leading into Sonic Temple that we couldn't have devoted one stage to acts like the ones that are going to be on this cruise.
Yeah.
I think, like, obviously you kind of got your heavy hitters of bands I have seen or would like to see again, like your Night Rangers, Queenstrike, Stripers, Symphony X, YNT, Slaughter, Disneyland After Dark. But, you know, bands that we've talked about on the podcast that I've not seen, that, you know, bands like Nestor, Black and Blue, Tough, I would love to see them. You have three different iterations of Jeff Scott Soto performing, whether it's with David Ellefson, Jason Bieler, or by himself.
Yeah.
So you can't go wrong there. There's just so much to like about this concert bill, and you know, I'm sure Eddie Trunk will be there hosting it if I had to guess. So really awesome, and I would love to see something like this on the mainland.
Yeah, and Crazy Licks, another band that I've picked a couple of times, are going to be there as well. I mean, it's a really, really good lineup, and I wish there was like a date where you could just go see them in port and then I could fly in, go see the concert, and then bail out. But
It's not that I have anything against cruises per se. I just, when you think of like heavy metal concert cruises or pro wrestling cruises, that just doesn't seem like the ideal setup as far as, hey, we're on a boat with all these people for 5 days. I don't know.
Are those the people you want to hang out with for 5 days? No offense to metal fans.
It's great for a concert, but what about the rest of the time?
Yeah,
it would be like anime convention cruise. I don't think you'd want to go on that either.
No. Like hanging out with those people for a couple of days in a hotel, that's fine. Hanging out with them on the open seas for five days.
I don't know.
Like, that seems like a challenge for sure. But great lineup. Really exciting stuff. I think, honestly, I would love to see this. And I just, like I said, don't know if I want to actually jump on a cruise to go see it, but yeah, it would be nice if this were actually a day or a stage of Sonic Temple, because I would be
be awesome.
I'd be playing at that stage the whole weekend. But good stuff. Definitely check that out. It'll be coming up again next April, so plenty of time to get your tickets. Although my guess is these things probably sell pretty quickly. So
I would guess,
especially with this lineup. So you might want to keep tabs on ticket availability if you're planning on making that trip. Before we get to the new music, just a reminder, check out our website, nerdcastempire.com. Of course, you got all of our old podcasts on there. You can go to our store. Again, schedule kind of a little different for the next couple of weeks. We'll eventually get it settled out once we get kind of on the other side of Sonic Temple. I think will be when things kind of normalize. We'll be on the other side of tennis season too, so that'll definitely help. But this week, we'll be back tomorrow night, obviously, with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. It's music, April the 11th, another really good week in music. So we'll have that tomorrow night. No news podcast on Monday. We'll be back with our next news podcast on Saturday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. So join us for that. And then, of course, a week from tomorrow, another episode of the Hard Rock Empire as we talk about the music of April the 18th. So a lot of music stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks. I hope you'll enjoy and join us for what should be a really, really good weeks of music, honestly, coming up over the next couple of weeks. But it's time to get to the new music of this week, which reminds me it is time to paste the playlist in the chat. Of course, each and every week, Mike goes through and pulls a list of the new releases for a given date. That given date in this case is April the 4th. And then he will go through and try to find a track off of each one of those new releases and put them in a playlist. That playlist has been added to the chat on both YouTube and Twitch. And again, as I always say, I encourage you to go through the playlist on your own, try to find your own list, try to find your own favorite releases, because there really is something for everyone on these playlists. We do kind of spotlight the stuff, obviously, that we enjoy, but if there are other types of rock and metal you enjoy, there's almost always something on these playlists that have that on there. So definitely check that out. We go through, we pick our two favorites each, and then we spotlight them here on the podcast. And again, another really good week, very interesting week, some very unique bands. It was interesting to hear all the different sounds this week. And I know you've got a couple of really good ones, really interesting, especially one really interesting one, this week, but always excited to get to the new music. So let's do that at this time. Mike, why don't you kick us off with your first choice of the week?
Yeah. You know, you can only play it safe so many picks in a row before you really have to like go out on a limb, maybe find something a little further out from left field. But yeah, my first band isn't that. My first band is pretty much right in my wheelhouse as of late. It is the first studio release from a Tampa, Florida-based new wave of traditional heavy metal band. The band is Midnight Vice, and this is their self-titled EP, Midnight Vice.
Yeah, again, this is not the one that I was referring to as far as...
This is not the adventurous one.
This is not the adventurous one, but it is they've got a really good sound, and like you said, something that is... right up your alley as far as new releases go.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of any of these bands kind of flying that traditional heavy metal banner, and this is definitely another one. They formed back in 2020 and originally released this EP in 2023. They've since signed with Raining Phoenix's sub-label, Rock of Angels Records, Roar, and they're re-releasing the EP. The band consists of Tyler Gray on vocals, Sam Bean on guitars, Lakota Stafford on bass, and Dennis O'Sullivan on drums. According to their bio on the RPM Roar website, they draw influence from bands like Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and kind of some of the legendary bands from the Florida metal scene, Crimson Glory and Savatage. They bring a traditional yet energetic approach to their music. I think if you're a fan of metal in the 80s, there's a lot to like about these guys. The Dead Rhetoric website had an interview with Tyler Gray, the vocalist, and he kind of talked about some of his earliest influences, saying, quote, "My dad was a big Headbangers Ball kind of guy, always had VH1 Classic on every Saturday morning. And I guess that introduced him to a lot of the classic glam stuff. But then growing up, he was also into skateboarding, which exposed him to other styles of rock like punk and early heavy metal. And, you know, like a lot of us, you grow up on that stuff and then you kind of move into some of the more obscure stuff as you get older. And that's what he did. And you can definitely hear it in their sound. The album itself is solid. It's 7 tracks, but it's solid front to back. It includes a cover of Savatage, their song White Witch, at the end of the album. But if you're into like the new wave of traditional heavy metal movement, this is definitely a band you want to keep an eye on. I think this is a great first EP from these guys, and I'm excited to hear what's next from them. Standout tracks include Strike in the Night, Spellcaster, Baptized by Fire, and the track that I picked to listen to tonight, Mysteria.
And one reminder we always throw out there each and every week, if you listen on Twitch or on YouTube live, especially, you'll get to hear the music clips from the albums. If you listen on the VOD, there's a pretty good chance you'll get them. If you're listening on your favorite podcast network, you Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you may or may not, you won't get to hear the music, and hopefully the other issues with the podcast.
Real player,
Winamp, wherever you get your podcast. But
Shoutcast.
Yeah, but we're not able to include the music clips on there because of copyright issues. But definitely encourage you to check out our podcast live, because that's the one place you're guaranteed to get to hear the music clips. Yeah, for sure. I mean, very traditional sounding, but also modern sounding at the same time, you know. There were a few tracks I've heard over listening to a lot of music this weekend, trying to get caught up on this. There that have that throwback sound, but it sounds like they tried to make it sound throwback, which is kind of it doesn't resonate with me as much as when you have a band that is paying homage to that sound, but also finds a way to make it sound current and modern. And this is another band that feels like they've really found a way to nail that.
Yeah, I would agree. It's again, you're kind of looking at who are going to be the bands that in 5 or 6 years we're still talking about in relation to this movement. And based on this alone, it's hard to imagine these guys won't still be at it and kind of being at the forefront.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely check that out. Midnight Vice, really good stuff from them. Our first release of the week. You've got two picks. You definitely have gone out on the limb on pick number two. I'm definitely curious to hear how this name is pronounced, because it is definitely
great question.
An interesting
looking I'm going name. To pronounce it the way I'm pronouncing it. It may not be right, but and for the if that's the case, I do apologize. But, you know, there's not a lot of info out there as far as, hey, here's our name, here's how you say it, just in case you want to know. But
I feel like that's important. If you're a band, especially if you're a band that maybe English isn't your first language, like, put just an audio clip on your Facebook page or on your website that has the pronunciation of your band name or track names or whatever it may be, because we really do want to get it right if we can. And you know, this is one that I knew was going to be challenging for sure.
Yeah, it makes for a really cool logo, though.
It does.
It's just very, very strange. But yeah, you know, there were a lot of pretty decent and good bands out there that I could have gone with, and they would have kind of been the safer pick. This one here, I typically kind of stray away from really long albums or albums that I know are going to be highly conceptual, even though I like that stuff. It's kind of a big ask for a band you're not familiar with to just jump right into what's like an epic. But with these guys, I did, and I'm certainly glad I did, because the album is pretty wild. This is actually just the second full-length studio album from this band from Brasov, Romania. They are an avant-garde metal band. They are Hetethemeth, with their second album, Telluric in Harmonies.
Their name is avant-garde.
Yeah.
I think I understand that word a little better if that is indeed where that has come from. But yeah, definitely curious to hear about these guys.
Yeah, so this band originated back in 1999. I believe is more of like an individual project that then evolved into a band. Over the years, they've released split albums, singles, live albums, a collaboration, but only two full-length studio efforts, this and 2016's Best Worst Case Scenario. Per their Bandcamp, they are comprised of Lau Cregan on vocals and lyrics, Vlad Andre Onescu on piano, keyboards and effects and backing vocals, Lucian Popa on guitars and backing vocals, Radu Sendea on guitars and backing vocals, Mihai Radulescu on bass guitar and backing vocals, and Kodrut Kosteya on drums and percussion. They also did include In Memoriam Robert Kotoros on guitars and programming, who, from what I gather, sadly passed away in 2020. You know, like I mentioned before, sometimes I play it really safe with my picks, and this is definitely not one of those. Their Bandcamp bio explains them in the following way. Hetethemeth is one of the most enigmatic entities on the metal scene, with a unique approach and no limit to their artistry. Their unhuman music is unpredictable, jumping from metal with ambient and black influences to blues and bossa nova. Conceptually, Hetethemeth paints a picture full of complex feelings, some pleasant and others cold, some confusing and others fulfilling. The tags at the bottom of their Bandcamp include metal, unhuman metal, avant-garde metal, dark metal, progressive metal, and Brasov. You know, I get in theory the idea of labeling your music as unhuman music. It makes sense in the sense of, you know, there's no way a normal human would come up with the complexity and just the variety that we're bringing to the table. But unfortunately, in 2025, it almost makes it sound like you're saying the music was done by AI.
Yeah, and that's true.
I don't think that's the case here, is I don't think AI could be trained to kind of deliver the full product that this is. I don't think we're there yet. But you know, something to consider. It's a long album. It's an hour and 18 minutes long. There are segue tracks kind of in between each of the real songs. The language barrier may be an issue for some people, including at times myself, because even though they sing in English, a lot of the spoken word tracks are, I believe, in Romanian. It kind of takes away from my understanding of the story, which there undoubtedly is a huge story here, as there are 21 tracks on the album. Standout tracks on it include songs like Life, Honest Lies, I Wanted You All, The Fools and Failed Queens, and The Odyssey of Nothing. And I totally didn't mark it on my list, but I believe the song that I picked to listen to is, in fact, Honest Lies.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like there's a progressive element to their influences, whether you want to say it's someone like Dream Theater or potentially even
like older,
Prog, progressive. Yeah. There's certainly some Dream Theater elements there. But yeah, there's definitely also kind of Yes type prog. There's it's definitely out there, and you know, but the vocals are very much melodic metal,
kind of theatrical melodic metal.
Yeah,
if I were to kind of try to label it,
so they definitely stand out really from both of those things: your typical AOR melodic metal and your typical progressive metal. It's definitely something in the middle,
and it's certainly tough too to pick in one sound bite what this band is, because their sound is so wide ranging. I tried to pick something that was probably more of an accessible sound than some of the rest of the album, but you know, it's really enjoyable stuff. It's just not, I'm cruising to the store and back, let me pop something in. No, it's an adventure. You have to kind of digest the whole thing. But you know, if you're just relaxing and want to listen to something that's going to kill some time, then this would certainly be an enjoyable listen.
Yeah, I'm interested in checking more of it out. 21 tracks is a lot, but I mean, clearly they've put a lot of work into this album, and definitely worth checking these guys out. And again, something a little bit different than maybe what we typically pick, which is always kind of fun to throw out a unique recommendation. But Hetethemeth, is definitely on that list of unique choices for the year. So definitely check that out. And if we do some sort of unique pick list at the end of the year, I think they would definitely be on it. I have two picks as well, and I did not pick two AOR bands this time. So for me, that's kind of going outside of the box. The first choice this week is a Canadian heavy metal band from Toronto, formed in 2023. They are Breaker, with their self-titled EP, which is also Breaker. These guys actually released this EP back in the middle of 2024. Very similar story to what Mike was just talking about with a different band. They recently signed with Wormhole Death, and now Wormhole Death is re-releasing their EP here in 2025. It's definitely, and you'll notice it from the track that I play, has a new wave of British heavy metal vibe to it. But I think definitely on the heavier side, definitely on the speedier side, more towards speed metal than maybe a straight up new wave of British heavy metal. The band is Turgay Fiskvatn on vocals, Caleb Beale on bass and guitars, and Ryder Johnson on drums. It's only a 3-song EP, so pretty easy to get through, but they're off to a great start. I saw one review compare them to Judas Priest. I think there's definitely some Judas Priest vibes in this band. Also, reading a Facebook post of theirs, it does sound like they're working on a full-length album. Maybe now that they've signed with Wormhole Death, maybe they're working on something a little more complete. So I'm really excited for that. I look forward to that coming out maybe sometime later this year, and we'll be able to check that out. But for a first EP, kind of getting a chance to get it out in front of the masses on a label now, I think they're making a really good first impression. I think people need to check it out. Obviously, standout tracks include the whole thing because it's 3 songs and they're relatively short. You can get through the whole EP in 10 minutes and 12 seconds. So definitely worth doing that. The song we're going to listen to on the podcast is all the self-titled, both from album and name. The song is going to be Breaker. But yeah, again, definitely some new wave of British heavy metal vibes there. But and again, always exciting when new bands are continuing to produce that kind of music. But this was really catchy, and I'm kind of excited to hear when and if they release a full album, what that whole thing sounds like. But Mike, your thoughts on Breaker?
Yeah, this was definitely one of the early ones that I marked as far as having potential. And I hear some like Accept there too. Yeah. Like definitely some like Udo Dirkschneider or even maybe like Saxon vibes from these guys. Neither of which are a bad thing. Again, another band that's really kind of leaning into that old school, new wave British heavy metal, early speed metal sound, and I'm all for it. I think maybe WWE needs to contact these guys about doing a theme for Braun Breaker. I don't know.
Sure. Why not? That was the first thought that crossed my mind as well, but really good stuff. And again, excited if they're releasing a full album. I can't wait to check it out, but definitely check out the EP, the re-release from Breaker out on April the 4th. I have two picks as always. My second pick is down the AOR road. Can't get too far away from it. And my second pick is an AOR band out of Sweden. Also can't get too far away from Sweden. This is a group out of Stockholm, formed in 2009. This is Captain Blackbeard with the album Chasing Danger. You kind of know what you're getting with AOR music out of Sweden, and these guys certainly don't disappoint. This is their eighth album, I believe, and it's the first since Neon Sunrise back in 2022. The band is Fredrik Valgren on vocals, Robert Maid on bass and vocals, Vinny Stromberg on drums, and Daniel Krakowski on guitars. Again, this is a country that just for whatever reason, when they do AOR music, they know how to do it. It's catchy, entertaining music. According to rockposer.com, these guys lost their vocalist in 2023 after their two most successful albums and really kind of wondered what the future was going to be. Fortunately, they were able to find Valgren and then decided basically to take the whole 2024 off from performing to work on this album. And I think that was a great decision in hindsight because they have really released a very good album. It's a great balance of rocking songs and even ballad-like songs. Clearly, I think they're going to reap the benefits of having taken that year off and finding such a great vocalist that it's going to allow them to continue to take this to new heights. I saw several reviews that said that they thought this was the best thing this band has done so far. So that's always really exciting news for them. Standout tracks include When It's Over, Chasing Rainbows, Piece of Paradise, and the song we're going to listen to on the podcast is Dreams. But yeah, I mean, you like Swedish AOR rock, this band is absolutely up your alley. That's the opening track, and it really just set the tone for the whole album, and it was a really easy listen. It's 39 minutes for 10 songs, so you're going to go right through this album very quickly, but definitely encourage everybody to check out Captain Blackbeard and their release from April the 4th. Mike, your thoughts?
It's kind of weird, but it's refreshing in a way to hear a band that sounds like this, and they're not signed to Frontiers.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a different label. That's awesome. There are numerous other labels that are pursuing this kind of sound. This again felt like one of those obvious picks. The second I heard it, like, oh yeah, these guys got it. And there's been such variety in the last few weeks that like you almost don't expect this sound. You expect so many other wide ranging metal sub genres and sounds. It's always refreshing to hear a band like this.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like you said, there's so many labels out there now that are putting out this kind of music, which is really great to see. And this is another one that basically is doing that. So definitely check those guys out. Really great stuff from Captain Blackbeard. Really enjoyed that album. That takes care of our new picks for this week. It is time to get into the vault, where Mike and I will give you a couple of classic albums you need to check out. Mike is literally, as I say every week, and I'll say it again tomorrow night, I'm sure, going through the vault, his literal vault of albums that he owns, and doing it by letter. And he is up to the letter H this week, and a lot of great choices, I'm sure, for the letter H. But what did you decide to go with for the letter H?
Yeah, there's a lot out there for the letter H. I always go back and I refer to the first round of my alphabet just to make sure I don't repeat bands if I can help it, or albums even more so. The first time around I picked an album from Helloween, which is kind of the most obvious H band in my library. Sorry, Hootie and the Blowfish. But I mean, they're great too. So the first time around I went with 2000s, The Dark Ride from Helloween. So kind of that next act that I have a pretty decent catalog of their work is the band Him. And with that in mind, I picked kind of the first album of theirs that I was introduced to that really got me into the band and, you know, got me collecting the majority of the rest of their work. This is their 2003 fourth studio album. The album is Love Metal.
Yeah, I kind of found out about them through you, like so many of the bands that released music at this time. And I didn't know really what to make of Him to start with, but obviously not exactly the same, because I don't want to make it sound like they're the same thing. But the thought of, if you're into modern music, a band like Ghost that has used a certain satanic like imagery that, you know, you could immediately write off if you didn't know any better. But once you get into the music, you're like, oh, this is actually really fun, melodic music. Like him, probably harder than Ghost,
and probably sure. less fun,
and,
really.
And maybe a little less fun. But at the same time, like, they're not, he's not advocating burning down churches. We're not talking about some of the stuff that, you know, the hardest of like Norwegian black metal gets into. There's still a lot of melody when it comes to him.
This is definitely like the softer side of Scandinavian music.
Yeah,
for sure. And yeah, it's interesting because like the Heartogram logo, which has become synonymous with the band, really wasn't used all that frequently until this album. This was kind of their first album that had it front and center, like, boom, this is our logo. And it's obviously worked wonders. It's almost like they took like a marketing class and realized that this would be really just such an iconic image that you would see on numerous tattoos over the years. It just a huge deal and super marketable. But yeah, the band got its start way back in 1991. I certainly was not aware of them back then. Their first studio album, Greatest Love Songs Volume 666, came out in 1997. But it was kind of not until Razorblade Romance in 2000 that they got a lot of traction over here. The first single off that album, Join Me in Death, appeared on the soundtrack to the movie The 13th Floor. You know, a lot of people here honestly learned about him through like Bam Margera or Kat mm-hmm. Von D. They were definitely kind of a big name people that endorsed the band. When you look at Wikipedia kind of talking about it, it was just kind of one of those chance things where Bam Margera saw one of their videos and was really into them. And next thing you know, they're buddies. It wasn't like a planned thing to market both the band and all of his creative endeavors on MTV. It just happened, but you can't really think of him without equating it to Bam Margera mm-hmm. at this point, for better or worse. And honestly, even though I got into the band through a friend, it's entirely possible that's how they found out about the band.
For sure.
You know, Love Metal, released in 2003, according to Wikipedia, has a more raw sound and organic sound. I kind of look at it because I listened to this album and then I'd picked up the two previous albums, Deep Shadows and Brilliant Highlights and Razorblade Romance. And even though I liked songs off both those albums, I felt like Love Metal was a more complete hard rock effort. Like, it felt like it rocked a little harder. Rocked consistently from front to back, yet had some softer tunes, but even they had more of an edge and maybe more of a pop sensibility than the other two. I don't think of myself necessarily as a huge gothic rock or metal fan, but just kind of to humor myself, I went through the Wikipedia lists of both genres, gothic rock and gothic metal. And turns out, you know, according to Wikipedia, the bands that are gothic metal, I like quite a few of them, as it turns out. Bands like Amorphis, Charon, Cradle of Filth, Danzig, Darkseid, Delane, Him, Catatonia, Lacuna Coil, Lea, Nightwish, Poison Black, Sentence, Typo Negative, Xandria. When I think of gothic metal, I think Sentence and Poison Black. They're kind of my main two bands. Him is definitely kind of a different, maybe more pop sensible angle to that, maybe more. And maybe even more gothic, to be honest, in a way, but I'd like all of them. As far as this album goes, standout tracks include Buried Alive by Love, The Funeral of Hearts, Soul on Fire, Circle of Fear, Endless Dark, and honestly, probably one of my favorite tracks of him's entire catalog, The Path. Like, it's kind of downtrodden and slow and depressing, but it's just an amazing song. Definitely one to check out. And just the album in general, it's just a really strong album, probably my favorite of theirs throughout the years. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, again, it's a band that I probably wouldn't have found on my own. I think that's, but there are a lot of bands from this era that I would say that about. I mean, you talk about seeing a music video and becoming a fan. I mean, I just think of Stradivarius in that category. We saw that one music video for Hunting High and Low, and that was like, oh, well, these guys are actually amazing. Like, why, you know, like I would have never, and it wasn't a music video that I saw over here.
No,
like it was something that was just floating around on the internet that we stumbled across. Like, there was so much of that in the early 2000s. And I hate to sound like the old guy, but sometimes I kind of hate that for the modern generation, that they didn't have that era where you were downloading things and you didn't know what you were getting, or you'd be online and find a music video for a band that you never heard of. Like there was that just raw, naivety of what you were going to get out there that just made it kind of interesting and fun.
Well, it's funny you mentioned catching a music video and getting into a band from it. I kind of feel like with a band like him, and I don't know exactly what the video was that Bam Margera saw that got him into him, but I feel like even for these guys, it wasn't until after Love Metal when you got to Darklight and you had like Rip Out the Wings of the Butterfly. Like I remember that being on MTV a lot. That was 2005, but I also feel like 2005 was kind of the tail end of when that was a possibility. You had this album, you had Avenged Sevenfold, City of Evil. Like who doesn't remember the Backcountry video or Beast in the Harlot?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that was kind of those last dying breaths of MTV being able to introduce you to new hard rock.
Honestly, I wouldn't even know about a lot of the music videos that are being made today if it wasn't for this podcast.
Yeah.
Because I see most of them when I watch your list and it's like, oh, this band has a music video. Like,
who are they making them for? Is it simply for YouTube or there still outlets out there that are like, hey, send us your video. We'll air it. God knows where.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be shocked if there's not some sort of European music channel.
That's certainly still probably
Japan,
possible.
Yeah. Probably. Like, I'm sure there are places where that's still a thing. Like, and maybe there is here in the US and I just don't know about it. Maybe if somebody would tell us if there's a channel or like a something on like a Roku channel or something that plays music videos of rock bands. Like, I'd love to know.
It just seems like that. And this kind of applies to everything we cover on our podcast. There are certain elements of each of those things that I think have this really cool nostalgia factor that someone isn't capitalizing on hard enough.
Should we start a TV station with music videos?
I don't
videos?
Know. Like, I just, where do you go to consume new music videos? I feel like there, if there was a way to deliver that to people, it would still get over. I just don't know what that is.
I don't know. I mean, that's something that we see sometimes on Twitch, and I think it would be kind of interesting if we took like the best 5 or 10 music videos that you come across every week and basically do like a half hour show where we just play music videos and.
That would be cool.
Like, I don't know. Is there an interest for that? Leave a comment. You know, let us know. Join our Discord, which I need to post the link for. We've seen people do that where they actually just show videos and stuff like that. And maybe there's an interest. Maybe there isn't. I don't know. Like, there's got to be some people out there that are like us that tune into this kind of podcast that would love to watch music videos each and every week.
Yeah. It makes me wonder because I feel like that's just something that isn't being properly delivered to people. Maybe. I don't know.
And some of these bands that we see each and every week put a ton of work into these videos. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they're just churning something out that's cheap. Like these are bands that are going all out for these. So I don't know. Let us know. Join the Discord. We got the link in the chat on both sides. Let us know. Would you be interested in watching a Twitch show that aired weekly where we just played the best music videos of the week? We just go through. Maybe it's not even songs that we pick for the podcast. They could just be music videos that Mike thought was interesting, and we just spotlight them. I don't know. Let us know. Who knows? Maybe somewhere down the road we'll add that if there's actually a demand for it. So, but him is awesome. Lots of him jokes as far as verb tenses, which always brought me joy. But, definitely check out him and this album as well, specifically Love Metal from back in 2003. So my gimmick for the vault at the moment is I went through the list of Wikipedia, or I'm going through the list on Wikipedia of Frontier signed bands, and I am picking basically two for each letter, where I'm picking one that allows me to make the choice of the album and the band. And then the next week I put it into a randomizer and let it choose the band. And then I go through and find the Frontiers album for that band. And this week we're up to letter C, and it's my choice this week for the letter C. And so I have decided to go with the second studio album from the Finnish power metal supergroup Kane's Offering. This is Stormcrow. The band formed in 2008. If you're a fan of this type of music, you're going to recognize a lot of these names. The band is fronted by Stradivarius singer Timo Koltapelo, Jani Limatainen, who has played with Sonata Arctica from 1996 to 2007, is on lead and rhythm guitars, acoustic guitar, and backing vocals. Jens Johansson, who we've talked about, I don't know how many times on this podcast, is, of course, the former keyboardist for Yngwie Malmsteen's Rising Force. He is the keyboardist in this group. And then two other band members, Jonas Kohlberg and Jani Hurula on drums. Obviously, that's exactly what you would expect out of Frontier to pull a band like this together. And with that level of talent, you know, this album's going to be good, and it's really good. It's a little more melodic than early Sonata Arctica, but you can hear the speed elements to it. You can also obviously hear the Stradivarius influence because the Stradivarius lead singer is singing on it. This is just, I can't recommend this enough as far as vault picks go. And I think it's going to happen a lot with Frontiers, where especially in these type of situations, and we've seen a lot over the time of the podcast where they bring these bands together. They just have so many talented people and you just create something that's just really, really outstanding. And I definitely, if you're a fan of this podcast, if you're a fan of the type of music that Frontiers puts out, you should go listen to this whole album. It is really outstanding. And I really want to listen to the rest of what this band has to offer. Standout tracks include Stormcrow, A Night to Forget, Constellation of Tears, and I Will Build You a Rome. This is great. It's awesome. This was a really easy listen. And like I said, I want to listen to more of what this band has to offer. But Kane's offering power metal supergroup is my vault pick for the letter C this week. Any thoughts, Mike? Because obviously you know those guys and you know what this is going to sound like.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine this is just ridiculous. And it does make me wonder if I went back historically through the catalog, both of Frontiers and just of some of these musicians, and find that they've been involved in a lot of things that just had never made it to my radar, mm-hmm. that if I did go back and listen to them, it would basically be like finding a new Avantasia, mm-hmm. basically, where it's like, oh, it's a bunch of people I like putting together ridiculously awesome music separate from the bands that I already enjoy. I'm sure there's a lot of that out there, and I imagine finding time to get to it might be a challenge, but I think it would certainly be well worth it.
And that was kind of the point of this vault gimmick, is that, you know, we have seen so many bands over the course of this, you know, year plus that we've done this podcast that Frontiers has put together. And it's like, oh, it's this singer from this band that I really like, or it's this guitarist, or, you know, whoever it may be. And they've just released this amazing music. And this is an opportunity. Because again, for C, I could have picked Cinderella or someone like that. Like, but it's like, I want to try to find these bands that I don't really know anything about. And as soon as I clicked on that one and saw who was involved, I'm like, well, I definitely have to listen to this. Like,
yeah.
But I think we're going to see more of that as we go forward. And I think that's what makes this fun, is it is a chance to find other Avantasias, other bands that you might not have, you know, you may have never known about, that now you have a new band to listen to, which is always really awesome. But definitely check this out. It's really, really good. Kane's offering with Stormcrow. That takes care of our vault picks for this week. It is time to wrap up the podcast with the Power Trio, our relatively new segment, where we will ask a question of three of something involving rock or metal, and we'll poll our panelists and try to get answers for all of those things. And again, you know, as we talk about each and every week, you know, as far as bands that are eligible or songs that are eligible, anything we would talk about on this podcast is pretty much fair game. So it could be rock, it could be metal, it could be classic rock. I guess it could be country too, who knows? Like, because, you know, there was a part of me that had a thought to maybe pick a country song for this, because that would just be way outside the box. I did not in this case, but this is a question I'm sure we're going to come back to many times on the Power Trio. So plenty of opportunity to get some other stuff. But the question this week is, your top three cover songs. And there are so many cover songs in music. And I think, you know, this is a great opportunity to get a chance to hear a different take on some song that you really like. And, you know, when cover songs are done well, they're really memorable, but they're also really memorable when they're not done well. And,
yeah, very true.
You know, I will never, ever in my life forget the cover of Heartache Tonight on that Eagles tribute. Ooh. Yeah. Just
some rough vocals on that
one. It was. But, you know, again, it's sometimes it's just as good when it's bad.
I think that's the risk with covering the Eagles, is that they're enough country on their own. Like, they're a rock band, but they have enough country sensibility where you don't have to infuse it with more.
No,
that is the last thing you want to do.
No, for sure. Definitely something that is a risk involved there. But yeah, so we got cover songs. Do you have any external? Do we get Shane's opinion on these?
Yeah, I did get some Shane picks, which are always...
We always love Shane picks.
Always interesting. He has fairly similar taste as we do, so it's always good to kind of see where he deviates. So his picks, couple pretty obvious ones, I think. His first one, which is undoubtedly one of those instances where the cover song becomes bigger than the original, and that would be Johnny Cash singing the song Hurt.
Yeah.
On his 2002 album American Four, The Man Comes Around, that obviously being a cover of the Nine Inch Nails track from their 1994 album The Downward Spiral. That song just kind of took on a life of its own, separate from the Nine Inch Nails version.
Yeah,
for sure. I think there are probably people out there that just assume it's a Johnny Cash tune.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder really how many people out there think it was the other way around.
Because it's not one of the first songs off the Downward Spiral you just immediately think of.
Right. So you have to think, like, how many people think Nine Inch Nails just threw that cover on there to... Like, oh, you know, no, it's actually the other way around in this case.
Yeah, like, you know, they did it first, weirdly enough. And like 8 years before Johnny Cash got around to it. Yeah, so.
Which Johnny Cash releasing music in the early 2000s, always a little surprising, too.
I've never listened to his American albums, but I imagine they're probably pretty good stuff. Yeah. I'm not a huge Johnny Cash guy, but
I respect it.
Yeah, absolutely. Second one, I think there's a song that's probably been covered quite a few times. This is probably the first or second one that comes to my mind, and that is Nevermore covering the song The Sound of Silence.
Yeah.
From their 2000 album Dead Heart in a Dead World. Of course, that being a cover of Simon and Garfunkel's track from their 1966 album Sounds of Silence.
There's another one that comes to mind too. Wasn't there like a, who was it that covered that song that was really low voice register, really slow? It was some metal band. I can't remember. I'm going to have to look it up now because it's going to.
It's a tough one, because I'm sure there are a lot of non-metal acts that have also covered that song.
Yes, for sure. I'm sure it'll be on their Wikipedia page, because they usually have the list of covers, notable covers. But while I look that up, feel free to continue.
Yeah,
on.
So he had an initial third option, and then he ended up substituting it out for a different one. The substitution, the one that he ended up going with, was Marilyn Manson singing Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
Oh, okay.
From his 1995 EP Smells Like Children. Obviously, that being a cover of the Eurythmics song from their 1983 album of the same name. Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, this is probably the song that put Manson on the map. Classic cover. Probably his best cover, because he has done some other covers throughout his career, but kind of hard to argue with it. It was a big deal.
Was it Disturbed that did the cover of Sound of Silence?
I know they did do a cover.
I feel like it was like really low and really... it's been a while since I've heard it, but for some reason I'm thinking it wasn't maybe the best cover of that song. But jumping back to what you were saying, that's a really good choice.
Yeah, definitely a good choice. The other one he was going to pick, which... It comes back to the, what do you want to, like, do you just pick the first three covers that come to your mind, or do you put in some more thought as far as, like, do I pick songs that I know people will know, or the artist covering it, or artists you'll know? Because the other choice was Cradle of Filth covering the song Temptation from their 2006 album Thornography. I like that song. It's a really good song. I was not familiar with the original. It's a cover of a synth pop band, Heaven 17, one of their songs from their 1983 album, The Luxury Gap. Was not familiar with it, but it kind of seems like something Danny Filth would cover. But all things considered, a good four picks. Can't argue with them.
It does make you wonder if there's not a subgenre of this where you could we come up with a power trio of cover songs that are bigger than the originals.
Yeah.
Because there are several that are...
Again, Hurt is probably one of those.
I have one off the top of my head, too, that I didn't pick for this week, but I probably could have, that would definitely fall into that category. Maybe not. I don't know. But yeah, so really good choices from Shane. Chris not with us in the chat tonight. We'll try to get his pick somewhere down the road, but I know you've got some great picks as well. And again, I'm just kind of waiting for the week where we pick the same thing. Cause again, like you said, and even Shane, like there's a overlapping music taste there, but covers is a pretty broad topic. So there's plenty of room to pick originals, but we don't consult each other before we pick these. We are completely oblivious until we get ready to do the podcast.
All right, so my picks. This one here, a band that has done a lot of covers throughout their career, and the cool thing about this song is it's not one of the more popular or most more well-known covers they did, but it introduced me to an entirely different band that I wasn't really aware of back in the 90s. The song in question is the Merciful Fate medley done by Metallica from their 1998 album Garage Inc. The medley includes snippets from the song Satan's Fall, Curse of the Pharaohs, A Corpse Without Soul, Into the Coven, and Evil. It's what introduced me to Merciful Fate and King Diamond. I was not really in tune with them up until that point, and just a really good cover.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a great album. I know people malign it sometimes, but
Turn the Page is a great cover, even though I'm not a big fan of the song.
That would definitely fall into the category of the cover being better than the original.
Yeah, Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah,
the Thin Lizzy version cover of it.
Yes,
really great too. My second one is the one I was really debating whether I wanted to substitute it out for another song from the same original artist. I ended up going with this one just because at the time I thought, you know, this is just a band throwing it on one of their albums. It wasn't a designated tribute album track or anything. The song is Nobody's Fault. The band covering it is Testament from their 1988 album, The New Order. And it's a cover from the 1976 Aerosmith song off their album Rocks.
Interesting. I don't know if I've heard that cover before.
Really good cover. And I like it because I'm not a huge old Aerosmith fan. Like, my wheelhouse for Aerosmith is like 80s and 90s. So to kind of get me more exposure to kind of the classic era of Aerosmith, and just a really good cover by a great thrash metal band. Just, it was kind of the dark horse pick, but I really love the cover.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. The older Aerosmith is a little hit and miss for me. Just not really the style I enjoy. And like you, the late 80s, really early 90s was that wheelhouse. But yeah, definitely interested in checking that out.
My next one is another one of those like mismatch covers where you're like, I would never have guessed this band would cover this artist, but they did. And they put their own spin on it. And I think it's an amazing cover as a result. That song in question is the song Cinnamon Girl, being covered by Typo Negative from their 1996 album October Rust. Cinnamon Girl being a cover of a Neil Young song from his 1969 album Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere.
That's an interesting album title.
Yeah,
I don't really know either of the original or the cover in this case, but
they're both good. I'm not a Neil Young fan. This is a pretty good song, and the Typo Negative cover of it, when you just think of what their sound is and what they do to this late 60s like folk rock song, it's outstanding. It's a great cover.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely have to check that out. Interested to hear how they, because I know Typo Negative, and I know, you know, Neil Young, so I'm definitely curious to see what that sounds like, because it's
worth a listen.
Yeah, for sure. I have to check that out. Yeah, I've got three, and I did pick two off of tribute albums. The one, because you just were thinking about, you know, covers where I like, oh, I could pick a country song. The country song that crossed my mind, I didn't put it on the list, is one of my favorite Marty Robbins songs called Ribbon of Darkness.
Yeah.
And it's a unique cover because the cover is sung by the guy who wrote the song, which is Gordon Lightfoot. Gordon Lightfoot put out a cover of the song after Marty Robbins had it go to number one on the country charts. And both versions of it are really amazing. Obviously, Gordon Lightfoot, when you hear the song, even as Marty Robbins sings it, you know it's a Gordon Lightfoot song. It is just, it just has that Gordon Lightfoot.
There's a boat that sinks in the middle of it. It's really weird.
It has that vibe to it, for sure. So, didn't pick that one, but that's just a bonus pick. Because, you know, yeah, there's definitely some country influence in music past. But the three I picked, I went kind of out there for pick number one. It's an album we've talked about before on this podcast, off of the Siam Shade cover album, where they did the tribute. It is 1/3 Pure Hearted Emotions by Janie Lane. Also honorable mention to Sebastian Bach doing Don't Tell Lies, which is a really great cover of the open of that. But, you know, Janie Lane really killed this. It's a little bit harder of a cover because it's more of a translation than Don't Tell Lies, which has some English in it. And I think they really wrote a really good English song. And he, of course, knocked it out of the park. And sadly, one of the last projects he was involved in before his death.
I wonder if he actually wrote the lyrics to the cover version, because I mean, the guy was such a great songwriter that would not have surprised me at all.
Yeah.
Also think Siam Shade is just a great candidate for Western covers because they rocked so hard.
And they've got a lot of English stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that helps,
but it's just their style of music to me fits really well with Western cover efforts. I think it fits really well.
Yeah. And it shows on that album. And we've talked about it before on the podcast, but if you haven't listened to it, you should definitely go find it. The other one that was off of a cover album was off of the tribute to the Fleetwood Mac album Rumors. Couple of really good covers on there. Decided to go with Gold Dust Woman by Sister Hazel.
Okay.
Again, you know, Sister Hazel, I don't say they're a one hit wonder, two hit wonder, maybe at most, but this is really good from them. And you know, it makes me wonder how many bands were in that mid to late 90s window that, you know, weren't grunge. Cause obviously you had the grunge rock and then you had kind of the pop, whatever you want to call it, that Sister Hazel and bands like that were in. You just wonder if bands like that could have just done what they wanted to do instead of what was popular and got them hits, what it would have sounded like, because this is much harder than what you hear in All For You, which is obviously their big song. You just wonder, like, you know, what does the rest of their stuff sound like? If you found like obscure stuff off of their catalog, is it a little bit harder than what their big pop hits are? You just, because I mean, they killed this. They did a fantastic job on what is not the easiest song to sing.
Yeah, it's funny because I think back to like the, I want to say it was the Headbangers, the Headbanger, like whatever the documentary was called.
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not the actual documentary, but like the series afterwards, Headbanger of Metal Head's Journey or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But the actual series, when they went into grunge, they talked to some of the artists in that subgenre, and they talked about really having such a healthy respect and admiration for like 70s rock. And I kind of wonder if that isn't the case with a lot of the artists, not even just within grunge, but just within pop and rock in the 90s, where maybe the music of the 80s didn't really speak to them as much, but you know, they found themselves more kind of along the lines of like a Fleetwood Mac, who, you know, were really one of the classic rock bands of the era. And maybe it's not too surprising when you look at that tribute album, the names that you see covering it, those are probably artists that were inspired by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, a lot of artists that were huge at that time. And there's some really good ones. I honorable mention to Tonic's cover of Secondhand News.
I was thinking Cranberries, Go Your Own Way.
That's a great cover. Really good stuff. And a song that really fits the Cranberries. Like,
yeah,
that song sounds like they could have written it. But that's a good cover album, too. Rumors is a great album. I know sometimes when you hear these big time classic albums, sometimes people run away from it because they think it's overhyped. That's a great album. A band that was like so many of the metal bands that we talk about on this podcast, rife with turmoil, and it made for great music. Like the fact they were going through all that stuff is what made their music so emotionally outstanding. The final cover, not off a tribute album, but off of a special album. This was off of the acoustic album released by Firehouse. The song is Seven Bridges Road, cover of the Eagles / Steve Young song. They did it just about as authentically as you could, and they absolutely knock it out of the park. It's one of my favorite covers of that song, which is one of my favorite Eagles songs. I just love that song.
Firehouse's vocals and their vocal harmonies probably totally underrated, but I do think Seven Bridges Road is like that. If you want to prove to people you can sing, that's the song you choose to do.
Yeah.
I'm not a big bluegrass guy, but this is about as close to bluegrass as I can still listen to and really enjoy. Cinder Blocks from Sonata Arctica being another. But yeah, I mean, this is just a tremendous cover, pretty much straight up, but sounds so good. And you know, we always talk about just the immense talent that the Eagles had, and you don't realize, and you probably don't really appreciate some of the bands, the hard rock bands from the 80s and 90s. And Firehouse is one of those bands that just, they were really, really good.
They were. And there's so many of those bands that, you know, even like I was just talking about with Sister Hazel, where you maybe just didn't get to see their musicianship on display because they were busy trying to write that big pop song that was going to set them off for life. Rock in a lot of cases. And, you know, because of that, a lot of those bands unfairly got pigeonholed as to just kind of being that, you know, we're just popular. You're not, you know, you don't rock. You're not talented. You're just a manufactured band. And, you know, those guys are really good and their stuff's really awesome. And I think they showed it. Some of these bands in these, you know, this wasn't a tribute album, but sometimes I feel like some of these bands that get into these cover situations and tribute situations is a way for them, obviously, one, to thank influences that led them to this musical journey, but two, sometimes they show their chops off and say, hey, look, we can do this. Like, we're really good. And I think they absolutely showed it there.
Yeah. And I think, again, Seven Bridges Road is really one of those songs that if you want to show people the chops you have, especially from the vocal side of it, that's one of those songs you pick. Like, it's very demanding and it really tests the depth of your harmony. But man, if you can nail it, it's a great song. And that band in general, Firehouse, like, go back and listen to their first album. It's for late era hair metal, so to speak. It's just a tremendous album. These dudes were awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And from just up the road, right? Are they an Ohio band? Is it Firehouse that was from like somewhere in Ohio or had members in Ohio?
I'm trying to think.
I feel like they
toured around here pretty extensively. They're from Virginia.
Okay. Maybe they have people that live in this area.
But
now,
I do feel like that they, up until their lead singer passing away, they were touring in this area pretty extensively.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, great. Just a really great band. Another one and another really great cover. And we want to know your covers. Again, join our Discord. Tell us what your favorite covers are. Join the, you know, in the YouTube comments, both on the live video and on the VOD that we'll post a little bit later on. Let us know, what are your favorite rock and metal covers? We definitely want to hear about that. And we'll revisit that topic somewhere down the road on another episode of the Power Trio. But that is going to wrap things up for this edition of the Hard Rock Empire. And we're going to have a bonus edition of the Hard Rock Empire. Actually, this was the bonus edition, if you want to get technical about it. We'll be back again tomorrow with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. It'll be the music of April the 11th, so make sure you join us at our normal time, 7 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow night on the Nerdcast Empire. Big thanks to Stoveleg Media for their continued support of our podcast. Big thanks to Mike, as always, for his work on this podcast. And a big thanks to you for listening whenever and wherever you are listening. Please follow us on Twitch and on YouTube. We're continuing to try to build our followers. Please tell a friend, share our posts, whatever you can do. We're on social media at Nerdcast Empire, pretty much everywhere. And join us live or on the VOD. We really do appreciate it. But that is going to wrap things up. We'll be back with you in less than 24 hours time, 7 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow, for another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. Until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.